Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee, 5 o'clock on a Wednesday, which means it's time for Jared versus Joe. Adam Vingan is in for Caroline as our guest moderator for Jared versus Joe. Hello, Adam.
Yeah, I think he's muted himself.
Don't unmute yourself, Adam.
I'm here. Hello, sorry.
Okay, good. There you go. And Joe Rexroad, fresh off of being right there on my TV at the end of the national championship game. I forget which Florida player went right over to press row and stretched his arms out like he was the Lord and Savior. But Joe was right there front and center for it. Joe, how are you?
Yeah, I think that was Thomas Haug. Yes, my sister-in-law sent that to me. And of course, as you watched that, then I just started like looking at my phone. Like a bored
teenager. Well, it looked like you were going to take out your phone, like, oh, got to take a picture. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, I was way too late for that.
Yeah. All right, with that, it's time for Jared versus Joe. Okay, Adam Vingan, the floor is yours.
All right, let's start with a question that Derek and I discussed today on our show. Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated wrote, and I also believe he said it on his podcast, but he wrote, quote, it would take an historic offer to move the Titans to trade the number one overall pick and pass on Cam Ward. Let's start with Joe Rexroad today. Joe, what would constitute an historic offer in your mind for the Titans to move off the pick and pass on Cam Ward?
Well, and first of all, you asked me what would constitute historic. I could be wrong. I mean, I don't remember all the compensation for. I mean, I remember the haul the Titans got 9 years ago. About a week from now, to move way down from the Rams. But to me, a reasonable offer, something that. Look, I mean, if I'm the Titans, I'm listening because I'm not drafting Cam Ward, but I'm not them, and obviously they're not doing what I say. But I think, you know, again, you got to talk about – we're not talking about a particular team, right? We're talking about
any team.
No specific team was mentioned. Albert Breer only wrote that it would be an historic offer that the Titans would accept to move off the number one pick.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, if we're talking about going to three as opposed to going to 21, there's a huge difference. But to me, I think you do need to get a first next year to go with swapping first. You need to get back into the third this year. If there's a possibility to get a proven player in there, good. But for the most part, draft capital. I think the big thing is like a first next year, along with, you know, a bundle of them this year would have to be involved. Again, depending on how far we're talking, because you know if you go to three, I mean I've scoffed at the idea that they would get the Giants first next year, but. I think they're not going to get it, and they're going to take Cam Ward. But I think that would have to be part of it if we're going to talk about them at three.
So people say historic, and I'm like, outside of the Herschel Walker trade, which was way more complicated at the time than people recognize now, and the Ricky Williams trade, which was just, I mean, just stupid. Other than that, like, I don't really know what constitutes as historic. So I guess I would say, because I think we're all, again, you're saying any team, but really we're talking about the Giants here at number three. I guess I would say it would have to beat the package the Chargers at three used to move up to number two in 98, which was to move up one spot. The Chargers gave up 33 and their first rounder next year and two players. So I guess that would be, well, it would start with three. 34, next year's one from the Giants, and then I would say next year's two. Like, if you're getting 1-2 this year and 1-2 next year, I think that beats the offer that Arizona got to move back in 98. And I would say that that's, again, pretty historic to move up two spots to number one. So, that's what I'm going to say is historic because, again, I hear that word thrown around, and I don't think it's an accident that that's what the Titans are telling people because in Hard Knocks, that's what Elliott Wolf said it would take for the Giants to move from 6 to 3 last year was something historic, and now that's getting thrown around a lot. But I'll go with 3, 34, next year's first and next year's second. And I would say that that would be more than what the Chargers paid Arizona for Ryan Leaf in 98.
Now, Joe, you had Charles Robinson on your show a couple of weeks ago, and correct me if I'm wrong here. Didn't he say something to the effect of it was going to take three first-round picks for the Giants to move up to number one?
I'm not disputing you. But
he said three first-round picks or its equivalents. And I would argue that the 2 seconds would equal a first 2 years down the road from now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with, I think, definitely 34 this year. And if you get the first and second next year, I think that would be good. I'm thumbs up on that one.
I mean, I would just say this. What would you guys rather have? Would you rather have 34 this year or the Giants 2027 first?
2027 first, I think they're going to stink.
Again. 2027 or 2026?
2027.
Oh, you said 2027. I think I'm probably going to go with the second this year. It's just so, especially, in this league, it working for this organization, you're getting picks from 2 years from now, I'm going to take what I can get right now.
I would take the second as well.
And that's why I'm like, I think that if you get the second this year and the second next year, that's probably better than getting, three first round picks, getting 1, 1, and 1. I think this would, in theory, be better. Adam, what's next?
All right. Paul Kaharsky posted this question on social media yesterday, a big talking point on our station. If the Titans draft Cam Ward and his best statistical season is 4,500 passing yards, a 71.4 completion percentage, 41 touchdowns, and 16 picks. Is that a success? 90.8% of 5,000 respondents said yes. That was Baker Mayfield last season. Jared, if Cam Ward peaks as 2024 Baker Mayfield, should we deem that a success?
No! Baker Mayfield lost the wild card round of the playoffs. No! Again, like 4,500 yards, it's good, but that's not unbelievable in this era of football. Mahomes, for instance, when we went to 17 games, Mahomes threw for 5,200 yards in a season. And so when it comes, the way I look at it is this, and I know that we can parse the individual. Baker Mayfield's season finished 11th in MVP voting this year, which is not bad, but it's not elite. And if I'm drafting a quarterback first overall, I'm using that premium pick because I can't get what it is at quarterback in free agency. You can't get Jaden Daniels in free agency. You can't get Joe Burrow in free agency. You can't get Mahomes in free agency. So that's what I want if I'm going to use the first pick. I can get Baker Mayfield in free agency because I could have had Baker Mayfield last year. Sam Darnold threw for 4,500 yards instead of 47 and 35 touchdowns and 12 picks, and Titan fans were like, oh, no, he sucks. So if that's not good enough, what is the extra 200 yards to you? I don't get it. No, it's not good enough. Again, in the NFL, there are kind of the elite of the
elites.
Darnold
is. So why is Darnold good enough, but that isn't?
Because I'm not using the first overall pick on Sam Darnold. So my plan for Sam Darnold is to stabilize the organization at quarterback, allow me to trade out of the pick, build up my roster, and then do what Kansas City did, which was when I find somebody I love, strike and go get them to be my quarterback. Same thing with Buffalo. They were a playoff team, and then they found their quarterback, and they made two separate trades in order to get up to take Josh Allen. That's what I want to do, not, well, it's the best guy in a bad draft, so let's take him, which is what it looks like the Titans are doing. And so I personally hate this. If you ask me right now, would I trade the number one pick for Sam Darnold? The answer would be no. I wouldn't trade the number one pick for Baker Mayfield. I trade the number one pick for Jaden Daniels. That's the difference.
So this is very much a question of semantics here. So when we talked about this on the show today, we did not talk about it in terms of the way you just phrased it, Adam, which apparently that was directly from PK's tweet, right?
Yes,
that was directly Paul's tweet.
So we talked about it in terms of if you basically, if this was your norm, not necessarily, because when you say peak, the only thing that worries me is sometimes you do have outlier seasons for, you know, subpar quarterbacks, and that makes it a little different than what we discussed today. But in terms of, so I don't disagree with what Jared is saying about the number one overall pick. If you're going to use that, you want to use it on, you want it to, the outcome to be an all-time great quarterback. But the reality is if you draft a quarterback at the top of the draft, and that is the norm generally, that kind of production, those kind of numbers, and you're a top 10 to 12 quarterback in the league, I'm taking it. I mean, it's not, look, I also, by the way, agree with Jared. I agreed with the Darnold thing. I think that would have been a better plan. But that production, that level of play, the level of play Baker Mayfield gave you last year, I'm taking that. I'm being realistic and understanding that, like, you know, that's still a rarity. That's still more than 80% likely you weren't going to get that with the number one overall pick in a quarterback, just based on the history of this league since the merger. So I will take it.
I think that this is kind of like, you know, the no cheering in the press box thing. Joe, I feel like you're kind of looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, some number one picks never work out anyway. So if he ends up kind of working out, that's better than the number one picks who never worked out. I'm looking at it from the standpoint of, like, Baker Mayfield to me is not good enough for the number one pick for my team. That's not good enough. Like, if I'm using the number one pick, I need a force multiplier that can go win me a Super Bowl. And Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, that's not good enough. And so I just, and again, I can get good, and I can get that. I can get Jared Goff in free agency and Sam Darnold in free agency and Baker Mayfield in free agency. And every year there's a quarterback like that I can go get in free agency. And But you're looking at it, I think, like you're bargaining with the situation the Titans put in. But if you were general manager of the Titans, that isn't what you would have done. You wouldn't even draft Cam Ward. Yeah, that's my point.
But if I'm in the organization and it's like, well, we're taking him, and that's what I get, you can work with that. You can win it all with that. You can't. And you can sit here and talk about Baker lost a playoff game. We're not talking about exactly, you know, cloning Baker. Baker has won a playoff game, by the way. Baker's good enough to win playoff games. And
Baker's actually won two.
Make runs. There you go. He's 1-2.
More Jared versus Joe next. Stillman and Company, 1025 the game. Guest moderator Adam Vingan, go.
All right, Joe, you're up first for this one. It plays off of the question I asked just before the break. Whose career among active quarterbacks would you accept as the bare minimum for Cam Ward if the Titans draft him number one overall?
Okay, active quarterbacks, bare minimum. Well, you know, when you think about that question, I guess, you know, my impulse is to let's just make the list only someone who has won a Super Bowl. But that obviously we have some great quarterbacks who you would gladly take who have not, and including really almost all of the best quarterbacks in the NFL right now, short of Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, basically, Allen, Burrow, Jackson, obviously all haven't won it. And of course those guys would all be, you'd be thrilled to have any of them. So I'm picking one player, right?
Yes, you're picking one player as the bare minimum.
I mean, the thing is, Jared and I disagree wildly about Jalen Hurts. That would be, and, you know, they're not anywhere alike at all as players, but that guy's won a Super Bowl. He's played extremely well in two Super Bowls. Really, that's probably too high. He's not the bare minimum. This question threw me off to pick one player here. Like, I'll go Hurts. Hurts has won a Super Bowl. I'll go Hurts. He's not, you know, he's not ever going to be one of those guys, one of those top guys with incredibly prolific numbers. And yes, He has great things around him. He's a
so a good game manager is what you think, Cam Ward. So you're okay with a good game manager for the number one
pick. I'm okay with winning championships. And a quarterback who, again, in two Super Bowls has thrown for 600 yards, 8 touchdowns, 1 pick, and run for 140 yards. Yeah, that's
so can I say,
manager.
Can I say Joe Flacco? Because Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl, and he's technically an active quarterback.
Say whatever dumb crap you want. Because, you know,
again,
you do it every
Joe Flacco and Brad Johnson won Super Bowls, too, with great teams around them. Again, I'm taking this guy number one. I'm taking him number one. If I'm taking a guy number one overall.
Jalen Hurts is comparable to Brad Johnson and Flacco and Dilfer. That's what you're saying. That's your argument.
Well, I think that Brad Johnson and Flacco are better than Dilfer. So I set that aside. I think Jalen Hurts is Brad Johnson. That's what I think. That those teams are very similar. That Tampa Bay team was freaking stacked. And Brad Johnson quarterbacked him to the Super Bowl. Sean King couldn't do it, but Brad Johnson was good enough.
They were also freaking stacked when Brady won it with them. But, of course, you know, you had Tom Brady. Terrific topic. Yeah, keep going.
But, I mean, again, the year before they had Jameis Winston as the quarterback, and they didn't even have a winning record. Brady clearly made a difference.
Sure, he threw 30 picks, yes. He's not good. Yeah.
Here's where Cam Ward would have to be in order for me to – accept him as worthy of the number one pick. He'd have to be, I think, maybe at the same level as Justin Herbert and CJ Stroud are right now, and maybe ahead of where I view Dak Prescott and Trevor Lawrence. Like, I view Dak Prescott and Trevor Lawrence as good enough starting quarterbacks. There are absolutely not 32 guys.
Are they better than Jalen Hurts?
I think if you put Dak on the Eagles and Jalen on the Cowboys, it would not change either team.
Okay.
For whatever that's worth.
The disrespect for Jalen Hurts is incredible.
I see the quarterback hierarchy, and I look at, you know, again, Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, Burrow, and I'm going to put Daniels in that group right now, and I'm going to say, okay, that right there is the elite, and – you know, it's pretty hard to ask somebody to be Mahomes. So I'm not going to ask him to be Mahomes. Then there's Stroud and Herbert, both of whom, like, they're probably there, but they're not totally there. And then there's, again, the Trevor Lawrence, Hurts, Dak, Baker, that group. He's got to be better than that group for me. So he's got to be, I'm going to say Stroud is what he's got to be in order to justify the number one overall pick.
Joe, any response?
Jalen Hurts. I'm happy with that answer. You're gonna have to build a great team around Cam Ward. You know, you don't really see too many teams that win at all that aren't great teams that don't have multiple outstanding elite elements about them, even with the greatest of quarterbacks. So. I'm happy with you. This is the minimum, right? This is the minimum you're saying. Yes, I'll absolutely stick with that.
It's got to be Stroud or Herbert for me. Adam, what's next?
All right, let's sneak in one basketball question since college basketball season is over.
What do you think about cheering in the press box at the Final Four? Joe, you go first.
That's not the question. I know. That's not the question, no. So the NCAA said that the national championship game between Florida and Houston delivered 18.1 million viewers on CBS, capping off the most watched Final Four weekend since 2017. With those numbers in mind, does that prove that all of the talk about the chalkiness of the tournament and the lack of Cinderellas was all overblown?
Who goes first?
Who's first?
Jared, why don't you go first?
I mean, I never complained about the lack of Cinderellas anyways. Like, I didn't have a problem with that. I thought the tournament had some awesome games. I mean, Arkansas, Texas Tech, awesome game. Texas Tech, Florida, awesome game. Florida, Auburn, awesome game. Duke versus Houston, awesome game. The championship game, awesome game. I mean, I think the bigger thing here is, and Joe wrote about it, Fitz was on the show earlier, he said nobody at the Final Four was talking about this, but I find that hard to believe because Joe actually wrote a really good article about it. The hardest part for me was watching Florida's coach and being like, is this guy like a stalker? Is this guy like really scuzzy? Like, is he a sleazebag, or is he just wrongly accused and, you know, a great young coach? And I feel like the people covering the game kind of had that sentiment covering it, like the announcers, you know, because there wasn't all this talk about Todd Golden is such a great coach at such a young age. It's like they ignored that on purpose. And I felt that as a viewer. But other than that, I mean, I thought it was a good tournament. I thought it was a good tournament from the first weekend, second weekend, third weekend. I thought it was great. Most of America doesn't pay attention at all. And then we have the tournament. And then by the third day of the tournament, everybody is a basketball expert and so on and so forth. And that's exactly what we got. We got great games, a great championship game. I thought it was great, great tournament.
So the perfect tournament, and to me, is when you have a Cinderella or maybe two, but you know, one that gets to the second weekend, and you have at least you have a little bit more upsets than we had this year. And then by the time you get to the Elite Eight, you get the best teams. So this was a great tournament, but obviously we missed the Cinderella element. And I think what people are freaking out about is that, look, with the way that mid-major programs have basically just become, you know, farm teams for the high majors, you know, someone has an excellent player. Belmont, my goodness, Belmont's all over this tournament with guys who could have been a Belmont, but they, you know, they got paid to go to other places. And the concern is that the Cinderella is dying, that we're not going to have these nearly as much. And look, I don't know that that's the case, but certainly you can see how it would be the case. And this year it did play out that way. So I think it's like the long-term concern about losing that charm, because I do think it's a huge part of this tournament. These upsets are, you have to have some of that. But at the end of a tournament, I also think that people, for the most part, just want to see the best teams play each other. And we obviously got that this year. So overblown, yes, I think it was overblown by some. And I'm not ready to sit here and say this is absolutely a trend and we're just, you know, it's just going to be high majors, these power mega leagues, and we're getting rid of, you know, like I want that to still be an element of this tournament. But the end of the tournament, I'm sorry, like, look, the ratings were terrible a couple years ago for Florida Atlantic and San Diego State for a reason, you know? I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. like, to me, that goes too far. I want to see what we got. Not necessarily all ones, but this year those ones separated themselves, and that's exactly the Final Four we should have gotten, and it was fantastic.
I thought the Final Four we had a couple years ago where we had Duke and Carolina, Coach K's last year, Jay Wright, Villanova, Kansas. I think it's great. I think it's great. That's what I want. I want Sister Jean to get to the Sweet 16 maybe, and then we love you, Sister Jean, but move on. I like the good teams. Adam, who wins this week?
I think Sister Jean is still kicking after all these years. So
good for her, by the way, making it through the pandemic and everything else.
Excellent genetics. So a quality conversation between Jared and Joe. I appreciate Jared's lofty standards when it comes to the number one overall pick, but I'm wondering if they are a tad unrealistic. I agree with Joe more so about Jalen.
So I'm
Hurts
not allowed to think
the
that the number one overall pick should be as good as the former number two overall pick in a draft.
I am not saying you're not allowed to think that. I appreciate your lofty standards. I'm just wondering if they are a tad unrealistic. I am closer to Joe. I would accept Jalen Hurts as the bare minimum. I'll say Joe wins this week.
Boom. Good judging. Excellent
the
job.
The thing that drives me crazy about this is that neither of you would take him with the number one pick. That's the thing that drives me nuts.
Well, I know, but if we're gonna be passengers on this train, you got to be realistic.
Well, then you've already criticized the Titans for doing this, so I can't. Congratulations to Joe. Three in a row. I tried to make it four, couldn't do it. Adam, thank you as well. Jared versus Joe here on the pro. That was a tough defeat. 615-737-1025. I do have a rant that I need to go on. And it's about something that is near and dear to their hearts. Talking about Joe and Adam, probably more so than me or you. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Fire staring at Will Richard. Hands it off now to Uzan. Uzan on the right-hand wing. Stops with 7 seconds. Gives it to Cryer. 6 seconds to go. 5 seconds to Sharp. Top of the key. Lost the dribble. He's got to pick it up. It's scooped up by Condon. Condon secures it. And Florida found a way. From 12 down to the school's third national championship in men's basketball. 65-63, the final. The Florida Gators are the national champions once again.
Okay, that was the national title game. We all know what happened. It was a good national title game. I do feel like most of us have probably moved on. You know, again, we watched it and then we moved on. But there's now this story that is going around as far as the capital J journalists are concerned. The Joe Rexrows, the Adam Vingens, the et cetera of the world. And I'm going to read to you the headline. Viral reporter Talia Baia, T-A-L-I-A-B-A-I-A, Talia Baia, whatever, lectured by Big J's over press row, no. So the Big J, capital J journalists are all mad because this Talia Baia is a student reporter for the ESPN affiliate in Gainesville. So she covers the team. I guess she's working there on an internship. Maybe it's a full-time job. I don't know. But she's a student. She goes to Florida and is in the journalism program. And she went viral because she interviewed one of the players, and clearly one of the players seemed to be very interested in talking to her. And so that went viral, so more people were following. And she was posting, like, social media influencer-ish content about, oh my God, when you're not allowed to cheer on press row, but this game is so close and you want the Gators to win it, blah, 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 whatever. Apparently, Baia recorded as Cougars guard Emmanuel Sharp pulled up for a shot only to hesitate as the Gators guard Walter Clayton Jr. closed in on defense. Sharp dropped the ball, didn't touch the ball, and Baia's school won the national title. Again, they play the video in which she said, no cheering in the press box, but level 1 million difficulty because the team you've been covering all year just won the Natty. That made some of these capital J journalists very, very mad. In fact, I bet Joe Rex wrote, and I would have loved to ask him about this, I bet he probably just like, how dare you bring that stink into this press box? And that is how a lot of these journalists feel. Eric Henry, whoever that is, quote tweeted it and said, the easy take is to chastise cheering as a reporter. Whether or I like it or not, the line between fan and reporter is becoming blurry, especially with non-traditional media. Unfortunately, however, stuff like this sets back people who want to get into media and be taken seriously. Let me say this. I think it's okay to be a sports fan and cover sports. Now, when I was younger, 10 years ago, I didn't think so. Even though I was a Titans fan, I didn't want to come on the radio when I first moved back to town to tell you that I love the Titans because I wanted you to see me as somebody who was serious and unbiased and impartial, and that's great, but it's not really authentic. But there's one thing I learned over the years of doing this. The Jared and the GM program, I thought one of our biggest strengths was you knew we love the Titans, we love the Predators. Where I think the line really gets blurred is not with this idea that people cover the team are fans. Let me ask you this. In Washington, D.C., do you think people who cover politics don't vote? Well, I can't vote because I am covering politics for the Washington Post. No, they vote. But there's a time and a place for all of this. You won't see me at a Titans press conference say, Coach, we need a big win this week, because I don't believe in that. I don't do that. You see me hold coaches accountable and players accountable and things like that. When I'm on the radio, again, I'm trying to be as authentic as possible. You feel the same pain I feel when I watch Will Levis flip the ball to the other team. It actually makes this job the most enjoyable because, again, I'm as angry as you, and I get to express it, and I enjoy that, and I think it makes for good content. Now, again, I'm sure Kaharski will hear this and will say, "Hey, that's my heat, not on me." Nah, 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 nah. But there's a difference. I think the question is, if you work in the media and you are a fan, can you A, be honest with your audience, and B, can you take your head out of your fandom's ass and be able to call a spade a spade? And if you can do that, fine, who cares? Now, look, I won't wear team gear to the games. You won't see me in a Titans shirt at the Titans games. You won't see me, used to back in the day, but you will not see me in a Predator shirt at the Preds games. You'll see my son in his little Preds onesie. You'll see all that. That's fine. But I do that because I'm not on the team. And I don't want, you know, there to be a feeling of the people with the team or on the team that I'm trying to pretend like I'm on the team, because I'm not. But you can be a fan and cover the team. Just like, again, you can be a political reporter and you can vote. It's fine. Here's the real problem I have when it comes to the way the media is trending. I don't have a problem with a student reporter at Florida tweeting out, "Oh my God, I'm so excited. I want my team to win," and not cheering in the press box. Again, if she's getting up every time they made a shot and going, "Ah, yeah," that would be a little over the top, because that's just awkward and inappropriate. The problem I have is that now every single team employs somebody who works for the team and masquerades as a media member. That I don't like. If you can't say what you honestly believe, and you can't publish what the team doesn't want people to know, then you don't count as a real media person, in my opinion. You're just a team employee. You're a PR guy. That's basically what you are. And I know this is going to offend people, because there are some people that have been great journalists that are put into these roles. But it drives me crazy when I'm listening to a press conference and the coach is getting angry and it's a tough game and it's been, you know, it's really starting to get contentious between the media and the coach. And then the hired gun in the press room sits there and asks a question, you know, "Coach, I know you guys lost 6-1, but you scored a goal in the third period. Do you take some positive from that?" That's the stuff I don't like. And there's nothing I can do about it. That's not going away. That's kind of the wave of the future. Teams want content on their own websites and YouTube channels and podcasts, and they want this all, and so they're going to hire people to do it, and people will gladly do it. But those people can't call a spade a spade. I want people that, again, I love the Titans. I want the Titans to win. I hate being up in the press box during a Titans game. I haven't been in the press box for a Titans game since the AFC title game in Kansas City. And I remember hating it because I was standing up there on like Corey Curtis's shoulder. And I was thinking, you know, again, I'm sitting there not saying anything, but I'm sitting there thinking, "God, stop doing that. Go cover that guy. Go move that guy over." And again, can't do that kind of stuff up there. But I don't think it, again, clouds my judgment as far as the Titans are concerned or the Predators are concerned. I mean, this season has been an unmitigated disaster for both of them. So I guess this is a long-winded way of me saying that it's okay to be a fan and cover the team, but can you be an honest fan when you're covering the team? And the number one thing that, I mean this with all due respect, but when you're a team employee, I don't think you can be as honest. That's the problem I have. If you're a capital J journalist, go criticize that. Go criticize the North Korea stuff. Who cares about the student reporter at Florida who, again, has been covering the team, doing a job, and she's not cheering on press row? She just tweeted about how hard it is to not cheer on press row. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, although I found it so disingenuous how he was so mad about the Mark Pope hire, and then the next day was like, "Well, I think it'll be okay." And I love Matt. But I was like, come on, Matt. But I don't have a problem with that. Those are Kentucky fans that want Kentucky to win. Go Kentucky. But what I do have a problem with is Wildcats.com, the lead beat writer for the team newspaper, the team website, sitting there in a press conference when people, when it's getting contentious with Calipari and the locals, to sit there and say, coach, may I ask you a question, coach? That's what I don't like. 615-737-1025. Again, I've been on some soapboxes today. Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063, the game.
So the question then becomes, do we roll the dice again? Or
at that same position.
At that same position. Or do we go with a proven commodity who can help us at another position? And when you're at in the top 10 in the draft, you'd like to get a guy who's a game changer. Now, yeah. All drafts, as you know, are not created equal. You can have a draft where there are 12, 13, 14 guys who have the potential to be game changers, and you can have drafts where there are five. This draft, in my view, is somewhere in between. You're talking about eight, maybe nine players who could make a real difference. By that, I mean win games on their own ability. You know, do you take one of those guys? The answer to that is unequivocally yes. When you're up, mm-hmm. you're up that high, if there's a guy that's a game changer at a position that you need, you should take him.
There you go. That was Bill Polian on SiriusXM NFL Radio. So Dane Brugler at The Athletic, his big draft guide, The Beast, is out. We will dive in a lot on that tomorrow. He has Cam Ward ranked as the 13th best prospect in this draft. 13th overall in a bad draft class. Am I the only person in the world that sees a problem with committing to that for the next 3 years? I guess I must be. That's it for us. We're out of here today. Great show. We'll see everybody tomorrow at 2. Preds Insiders is next. Stillman and Company, great job. Day 3, David Reed, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.